Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning. We're going to continue a conversation that we started yesterday about the increasing roles of women in the military, whether they have the same opportunities, and how do they fare when they're actually serving. A new report shows sexual assault in the military was up 9% last year, and that a lot of the assaults actually go unreported still. The report also shows that the VA health system isn't set up always to care for women, and it may be harder for women to rise through the ranks. The author of that report is Erin Mulhall. She's Deputy Policy Director of Research with the organization Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. We're also rejoined by Army Sergeant Kara Hammer. She served in Iraq from 2004 to 2005 and works in veteran services at the IAVA. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Erin, the report that you authored says there's a 9% rise in sexual assaults in the military last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
correct.
It also says that many of these are going unreported. But one of the responses from the Pentagon was that part of this rise is due to an increasing number of reports of sexual assault. How do you reconcile those two things?
Sure. Well, the Department of Defense really just began to put in an adequate tracking system in recent years. So we really don't know the true extent, the scope of sexual assaults in the military, because we haven't had this consistent reporting requirements year after year. One of the things they stress is that the fact that the rates have risen in the last year is due to reporting, which is great. We encourage more female victims to come forward and report this crime so that action can be taken against their victim. At the same time, you know, we're still seeing that half of all sexual assaults are going unreported, and we need to expand, we need to increase the ability of more women to come forward and report this crime.
Well, the Department of Defense, in their response to your report, it points to a policy that they started in June of 2005 in which they allow soldiers, female soldiers, to report sexual assault without giving their own name or their attacker's name. Why hasn't that fixed the under-reporting problem?
Sure. Well, still, I mean, even with the reporting, restricted reporting, actual anonymity is, you know, it's next to impossible to guarantee. You still have to report rank and gender and age, and especially in deployed environments when you're working in such a close-knit community. I mean, it's possible that that information could come out. At the same time, you know, other women are fearful that if they were to report it, that they might be moved from within their unit, and they don't necessarily want the repercussions to happen against them rather than against their attacker. Trauma itself is very difficult to report, especially in the military when you're serving alongside your attacker. And, you know, it takes a lot for a woman to come forward and report the crime. And even if there are extra assurances, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, the victims feel comfortable enough to report these crimes until they leave the military, which is why, you know, we're seeing that women are turning to the VA for counseling, but after they leave the military.
Kara, you
and after they lose the action taken against the attacker.
Kara, you served for 5 years of active duty, and you were in Iraq as well. Did you know any female soldiers who'd been assaulted?
I did, in fact. I was lucky enough to not have those experiences myself, but I did serve with one specific female that I know underwent some assault from a coworker of hers, in fact.
Did she report it?
She did not.
Why not?
There was an instance, and, you know, I don't know the full details of it. That was her choice. She chose not to, whether she was protecting her counterpart. She actually made up a story to protect him.
I made up a story for her injuries? To explain
for her injuries, yep. She was assaulted by her counterpart and then was told the command that she fell.
This is getting into sensitive territory, but if you were in your friend's place, would you have felt safe enough against repercussions to have reported it yourself?
I feel like I would have, I guess mainly because I wouldn't take those repercussions would be worth it, I guess, to me. And, you know, to some, it's not. People want to make a career out of this. and you're told that, you know, you have the opportunity to tell, but your command is not always supportive like they're supposed to be.
Aaron, you authored this report, and one of the things I found interesting, one of the statistics I found interesting, is that in 2007, only 8% of sexual assailants were referred to courts-martial in the military. Now, that's compared to 40% of offenders in the civilian court system. Why is there a 32% difference in the number of offenders who get referred into the courts?
Sure. Well, courts-martial is actually a very difficult process, and often the evidence isn't there necessarily for a commander to begin the investigative division to begin the process of court-martial, whether it's because, you know, they didn't collect enough evidence at the time of the assault, or whether, you know, there really isn't enough, you know, other witnesses to the event. So oftentimes commanders in the field pursue administrative action, which is, you know, while they're not convicted of the crime, they do. It's pretty much a career ender for their military career. Unfortunately, I mean, that does little to, you know, convict the assailant of the crime. You know, they're not then added into the sexual assault offenders registry. So, you know, while it may be an ender for your military career, you're still, you know, it's an administrative versus a criminal proceeding.
Okay, Femi Okeh actually went and spoke with New York National Guard Major Lynn Currier yesterday. She has two daughters, twins, 25 years old, and they have also served in Iraq. And this is what she had to say about the sexual assault issue.
There has been one occasion where my daughter did deal with it in Iraq, and I had to actually go to the commanders here in New York. Let's just say had a small conversation and things were taken care of.
So, Kara, it would be great if all women in the military had a mother who was a major and could take care of it for her, but that's certainly not the case. How do we better protect our female soldiers?
Well, I think it starts with training. You know, you fight like you train. So you train, and the importance of, you know, women's issues. And I think that that's a great start and destigmatize, I guess, all these women's issues and, you know, kind of integrate and, yeah, show the importance of female service.
So maybe all the soldiers, both female and male, are not being trained enough in this issue, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, just across the board. We have an equal opportunity training, and that just kind of depends on who's giving the brief, how seriously that's taken. And maybe they're just, you know, toes need to be held to the fire.
So, Aaron, another thing that your report examines was the healthcare system. And you wrote that it wasn't until 2003 that VA hospitals were even required to meet basic health service for female vets. So has that improved since 2003? It's been 6 years. Are the VA hospitals now providing adequate care to women?
Unfortunately not. I mean, one of the things we're seeing is that, you know, there's a flood of female veterans coming to VA hospitals and clinics. As more women are serving, they're going to be utilizing VA healthcare services in higher numbers. Unfortunately, because the VA has been designed to primarily serve male patients, you know, there's the same level of services there for female veterans that they had, you know, say 10 years ago. I mean, the VA is doing its best to ramp up to meet the surge of female veterans. Unfortunately, they're not doing enough in time. You know, women are experiencing fragmented care. There's not the type of, you know, privacy standards that are being met because VA hospitals don't have the infrastructure in place.
So, Kara, was your experience different? Do you recognize that? Was it easier for you to get adequate care?
No, actually, I think I probably have an experience that's right on track with that. When I came back after a mental health screening, I was told I needed to go see a mental health professional, and I had two options. One was group therapy, and that was, you know, mixed gender. I was going to go with a bunch of OIF men as well as female, and I'm supposed to share my experiences with, you know, people who probably helped and, you know, created my bad experiences. And then the other was to go to first come, first serve, and see a professional privately. And I did that one time, and I went and signed in, sat down, and looked around, and I was sitting with five other male World War II, Vietnam, you know, Korean vets, some missing limbs, and I thought, man, what am I doing here? I have, you know, no business being in the company of these men. So it's hard, I guess, to kind of go, you go through the system and they make you feel
out of place.
Out of place, exactly. And then, you know, so you're walking to your health appointment, and you're getting catcalls down the hallway and, you know, like you're a candy striper coming to pass out cigarettes. So
I guess the takeaway is that we have a long way to go before we find a place for our female soldiers. That's Army Sergeant Kara Hammer, Iraq War veteran working for the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Also heard from Aaron Mulhall, author of that new report from the IAVA.